You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklynsradio.co.uk or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklyn's Radio. Just Women is just what you need.
Hi and welcome to Just Women, our weekly chat show where for the next hour we get the opportunity to talk to women about a variety of subjects which can be inspirational and often thought-provoking. I'm Ivana O'Brien and alongside me today is the lovely Anne Twist. Hi Anne, what have we got on today?
Well today, I'm really looking forward to today's show actually. We're going to be talking about teacher training and we're going to be talking about the very important subject of gynae health.
Brilliant. All sounds great. So to start the programme today, we'd like to welcome Chrissy Taylor with two teacher trainees from Weydon School. That's Lena Taylor-Vick and Emma Mitchell. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I've been looking forward to having this conversation because I'm dying to hear about some of the antics that these pupils get up to in the classroom. But before we talk about that, can you tell us a bit about your backgrounds? What brought you to this point? Some of the things you've done before. Can start. Anyone can start. Emma, do you want to start?
Yeah. So originally I did my degree and then a PhD in neuroscience, and then I worked in research for a while, and then I started working for a school's expedition company. So that's how I kind of got involved in working with young people. And then after doing that for a while, I decided I wanted to combine the two and put my science background to good use. So then I decided I was going to train to become a teacher.
So how did you find out about the programme that Weydon School are running, the SKIP programme? How did you get involved in that?
I was looking at different options for getting into teacher training, and the eye-to-eye programme seemed like the best one for me because you got into a school straight away and you became part of the team at the school straight away. And that's what I really wanted to do. I didn't want to have to go back to university. I wanted to sort of just get straight into it.
Literally, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. So before we come on to talk about that, Lena, how about you? What's brought you to this point?
Well, like Emma, I have a different background. I did a business degree at university and I worked in the city for about 10 years. And then I worked in telecoms for another 5 years. And I had a break when I had my children. And then I decided after that break that I wanted to do something very different. And I was really, really attracted to teaching. And I've always loved maths, which is what I'm doing now. So I decided to look into it. And I'm becoming a maths teacher.
So you love children so much that children at home and children in the classroom is great.
Yes, exactly.
Fantastic.
Excellent. And then Chrissy, obviously yes. You're involved in the I2I partnership, very much in the sort of marketing side. So what's been your background to date? You know, what's your involvement?
My background is predominantly recruitment.
Yeah.
I worked in finance recruitment for almost 12 years, and then I took a break to raise my family. And then I went off on a bit of a tangent and ran my own business for 5 years.
Oh, okay.
I ran a children's clothing business
for 5 years. Okay.
Very different. And then I had quite a big change in my personal circumstances and had a bit of a kind of life rethink.
Yeah.
And I've kind of tried to combine lots of aspects of my background in my current role, which is all about growing the I2I teacher training program and encouraging more people into teaching as a profession.
So you're not a teacher, you've never been a teacher?
No, I've not a teacher, never been a teacher at all. So, you know, I'm kind of, you know, coming at it from the non-teaching angle.
But. So how did you get this tie-in then with Weydon School? Is I2I your business or?
No, the I2I teaching partnership is the training school,
yes.
Is the training program,
yeah.
But it's led by and run by Weydon School.
Right.
So there's actually a partnership of 21 schools across the whole partnership,
right?
But it's led from Weydon School.
From Weydon
but
School.
We work across Hampshire, Surrey, Berkshire, and a little bit into Middlesex as well,
okay.
With our network of schools. So our trainees, will do a day at Weydon School where they do their professional studies, but they will be placed out in a different
in other schools.
In the partnership to give them a really rich and varied experience.
I saw that, but your involvement is that you came at it with your background in various businesses,
yes.
And recruitment,
recruitment
cetera,
and marketing
to bring
really,
your skills to.
Yes.
To the partnership.
Just something new, and for me, something that I felt was a little bit more worthwhile
in
terms of what I was doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I've got kids, and I really now, I've got kids value teachers much more than I did when I was at school. So actually, I can see how important it is.
Yeah, it's a competitive world out there, so you need the best, teachers. So how long have you been involved?
Just under a year.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So yes, I'm very new to the whole environment. So it's been just under a year, and I'm loving every minute of it. Lots to learn, lots to do, very challenging, very busy, but great.
Good.
So how did you get the message out there about the programme? How do you
lots of different ways, really.
Obviously, this programme is going to help that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's this kind of thing. We do a lot of work with the government, with the Department for Education, in terms of promoting what we're doing. And we run a lot of events so people can come along and find out more. So we promote those through local radio, through the media, through social media. We do a lot of work on Twitter and Facebook, the local papers, and word of mouth, you know. And our current trainees are great advocates. They often know people. Our current teachers often know people. So that word of mouth is really important.
So in terms of the training programme itself, you two are obviously involved in it. And how long will you be training for?
It's a school year. So we started in September at the beginning of the school year. And we've actually only got 2 days of teaching left before
on Friday.
Qualified teachers.
School is definitely out for summer. And you will be qualified teachers.
Yeah. On Friday.
And okay, so you'll be teaching what ages? 11 through till 16, is it?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes, it's a secondary.
Scary stuff.
Oh, yes.
Scary stuff. So you've had this year. Prior to that, then, you didn't have to go back to uni and kind of study your specialist subjects in of maths and science because you're experts in them anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the subject knowledge is, they assume you have already. Yeah. So what this year is all about is just preparing you for the classroom. So the pedagogy and the training in teaching your subject is what this year is all about.
What about if you do, say, for example, a degree in media, but you then want to go on and teach a different curriculum subject? Does that PGC or the SCIT give you those skills to do that?
No, you need to have some link to that subject that you want to teach. Even if it was a while ago and you had an A-level in that subject, or if you're a career changer and you've been working in that particular field, and if your subject knowledge will be assessed as part of the interview process to get a place on the programme. But we do offer subject knowledge enhancement courses. So somebody's subject knowledge is a little bit weak before they start the programme, or send them on a course to build up that knowledge, which also builds up the confidence.
I was thinking about that because I studied languages at uni many years ago. Yeah. I don't know if I could go into Wadden School and speak and teach Spanish now, you know.
Yeah.
I would think there'll have to be some kind of refresher.
Absolutely. You know, that subject knowledge is really, really important. So, you know, if it's not quite where it needs to be, then, you know, for most subjects, there's a course available to get your knowledge up to speed. And there's other things you can do individually as well to improve your subject knowledge.
So the good news is if you do it in something totally different, there is still hope that you could, if you went on.
Yeah, so you've got to have some sort of link, though, you know, like an A-level, for example, if you did an A-level in that subject, your degree was partly related to that subject, or you've been working in that industry, something along those lines. But there does need to be a link somewhere. You couldn't just pick something totally random.
But so for primary, which is slightly different, obviously you could do a degree in something else for primary and then do the PGC, and that would
be primary is quite different. And primary is not something that we offer as a teacher training program. We're very much focused on the secondary side. And I think, you know, something that Lena said was that she loves maths. And actually having that passion for your subject is a really, really important part of it. Because if you've got that genuine passion for your subject, you are going to get that across in the classroom. Mm.
And obviously for primary, you need maths, English and science GCSEs.
Yes.
Now for secondary, I know it's maths and English.
Yes.
If you really struggled with maths at school and didn't get your grade 4 now, as it was, or it used to be a C, do you do an equivalency test?
Yes, there's an equivalency test that you can do.
Brilliant.
And you also have to do a skills test in both maths and English just to assess that you have got that level of knowledge. But there's loads of resources out there to help people with that.
Cool.
Okay. So I'm going to ask Emma first. How's it been? You know, I would imagine pretty full on in the last year. I mean, has it been stressful?
Yeah, she's still smiling.
Or is that a grimace?
It's been really, really good fun. Really, really full on.
Yeah.
Really hard, but every day is different because you're in the classroom from the very first day on the training course. So for the first couple of weeks, you're just observing the other teachers, and then you'll start to teach parts of lessons. And then by the first half term, you're sort of taking on your first classes and teaching them. So I've really enjoyed sort of getting to know my classes, learning how to kind of manage them and sort of building that relationship with them as well. And because I was a tutor for my tutor group, so my year 7 tutor group started at the same time as me, so we got lost around the school together for the first week. And that's a really good part of the program, actually, is that you're like a member of staff at the beginning, even though you are a trainee. So you're involved in all the pastoral part of it as well.
So which school are you in? Obviously you're not in Weydon, you go there one day a week, I think.
So my main placement is actually at Weydon school as well.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, you got lucky because it's a good school, isn't it?
It is a lovely school,
I would think with children who are sort of helped at home and encouraged and all that sort of thing. So
yeah, in the most part.
In the most part. So what have you found sort of most challenging?
I think subject knowledge, say for science, because we have to teach biology, chemistry and physics, there's a lot of content. I think the first time I had 30 11-year-olds in a class in a lab with Bunsen burners lit, that was quite a challenge and a little bit terrifying. And just kind of working out how to explain things in a way that all of the students can access.
Right.
It's been quite a learning curve.
Yeah, different ability levels within the classroom. And different interest levels, possibly.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And how about you, Lena?
The same, really. I mean, it's been an amazing year. I have loved it, but it's been also the hardest thing I've ever done, without a shadow of a doubt. It's really hard work. You have to really, really be good at planning and being organized, because there's a lot to take on very quickly. But as Emma said, they are really, really good at building up your confidence. So in the first half term, you spend most of your time observing, and then you take on classes gradually and get to know them, and you build up your own confidence within the subject as well. So it has been very manageable.
Yeah.
And it's been really, really enjoyable. I've loved it.
Good.
Well, we're going to hear a lot more about this afterwards. I want to hear some of the funny stories when we come back. So we're going to have a short ad break, and we'll be talking again to Chrissy, Lena and Emma, so stay tuned.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. Picture this, a Sunday lunchtime carvery where you can eat as much as you want with a choice of one, two or three courses. You're free to help yourself to succulent pork, beef, chicken or gammon. And if you wish, you can have them all. Add in a homely, family-orientated environment with free parking, and you have your perfect destination for the perfect Sunday lunch. It's all here at the Best Western Ship Hotel by Monument Green, High Street, Weybridge. Book now on 0800 393 130. We're one of the most welcoming places to eat in Weybridge.
You don't have to be in Surrey to hear Brooklands Radio, and with our brand new free app, it's even easier to take the sound of Surrey with you. Download the app to your mobile device to be just one click away from music, entertainment and all of the local news that you need. Plus, you can instantly access our social media feeds, keeping your finger on the Surrey pulse. Our app is available on all Android devices through Google Play and on your Apple products through the App Store. You can also find out more details on the website www.brooklandsradio.co.uk. So whether listening near or far, take the sound of Surrey wherever you are with the new free app from Brooklands Radio.
Hi, it's Jill Bennett. Why not listen in on Thursday afternoons between 1 and 4? I'll be playing lots of great tunes featuring classic hits from across the decades, news and events in Surrey, and your essential guide to a happier and healthier lifestyle. There'll be a guest each week sharing their experiences. So join me, Jill Bennett, this Thursday on Brooklands Radio between 1 and 4.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Anne Twist, together with Ivana O'Brien. And we're talking with Chrissy Taylor, and we're talking with Emma Mitchell and Lena Taylor-Vick. And we're just talking about the training program that you offer. And I just wondered how that differs from any other kind of teacher training program for people who maybe come through industry and want to become teachers later in life. Is this the typical route, or is there another way as well?
It is one of the typical routes. You can go and study at a university and go the university-led route, but it tends to be less hands-on.
Yeah.
You're not, as I think, you know, Lena has said, you're in the classroom from day one this way.
Yeah.
So you're learning both your PGCE, which is your academic qualification, but also you're getting your qualified teacher status, your QTS qualification. qualification at the end of it. You are based in a school and you are a teacher from day one.
Yeah.
Because you don't always get the PGCE with the QTS, do you?
Not always, no. So we offer, you know, we offer both. So you can come out with both of those. To teach in the UK, you have to have your QTS qualification. You don't have to have your PGCE.
Oh, okay.
But if you then wanted to go and teach abroad, for example, if you fancied a change, or even in Scotland, you have to have that PGCE. And I think, you know, most of our trainees find that PGCE academic training very, very valuable, because it is the kind of, you know, the research behind what you're doing on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I think that's fair to say, isn't it?
So in terms of funding it, though, obviously if you're not getting paid, you're having to fund that yourself?
Yes, it is self-funded. Yeah. There are lots of bursaries available. So dependent on what subject you're teaching, the government will offer bursaries.
Sciences and maths, obviously.
Through that. Sciences and maths are up there because, you know.
And languages as well.
Languages. Really? Okay. Geography at the moment attracts a high bursary.
Do they still call it a golden handshake for the sciences and maths?
No, the government have changed that a little bit, and it's always under review. So it tends to change constantly year on year, but that bursary system always remains the same. But some subjects, for example, PE doesn't attract a bursary because there are plenty of PE teachers in the world. Sure. Whereas, you know, where there are particular shortages in a particular subject, then the government will want to encourage people and help them to fund their way through it. So, you know, you have to, you obviously have to pay for the course, but you can pay for that out of your bursary. You can also apply for a student loan, a maintenance loan. There are lots of ways that people can be helped to get them through that first year.
So it's not dissimilar then to going to university, but in terms of the funding available.
In terms of funding available,
However, I would have... I'm quite surprised you can do it all in a year in terms of what must be involved. If you go to university, is that still a year?
Still a year. They just tend to structure the way that you do it. So you might be in a school for a block period of 6 weeks, and then you won't be in a school maybe for another 6, 8, 10 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And then you get back into a school. So it's a slightly different approach.
Yeah. I think this sounds great, actually, being with the children all the time. Because, I mean, I would have thought that would be the difficulty. If you've worked in an industry, you haven't worked with children, suddenly dealing with teenagers... You tell me.
I think so. And also, I think, you know, in a school-led program, you are viewed as a teacher from day one. You're not seen as a trainee. You are seen as a teacher by the children. And I think that makes a huge difference to your relationship with the children.
Of course. But in terms of your program, have you found that you've got a lot of response in terms of applications, or... do they need more teachers at the moment? What's the situation out there?
There's definitely need more teachers. There is a shortage of teachers. Teaching doesn't have a great reputation in the profession. And it is an amazing profession that, you know, without teachers, we're all, everybody's in trouble.
Sure.
Applications are really strong at the moment, which is really, really encouraging. I think more people are recognising the kind of intrinsic value of teaching, and maybe they've come from a career in the city and it's all about the money, and they're actually thinking, well, actually I want to give a little bit more back now. I mean, it'd be quite interesting to hear from Lena and Emma why they've gone into teaching. What is their why for teaching? Because I think it's a profession where you don't necessarily get that. Other professions, you don't get that why so much that you do in teaching.
So ladies, over to you.
It's a lot of truth in that. I mean, I took a break to raise a young family, and when I wanted to go back to work, I thought long and hard about it, and I thought, well, you know, going back to what I used to do wasn't very attractive anymore. You're just kind of lining shareholders' pockets, and I thought, now I want to do something useful with my time. And I knew it was a shortage of maths teachers. They've been screaming about it in the media for quite some time, and I really felt I could kind of fill a gap there. So I thought I wanted to do something local as well. I wanted to have a life that didn't involve commuting to London.
Yeah.
So for me to be able to work locally was a real, really pull. And I have children who's in that age group as well. And as Christy said earlier, I do really, really enjoy maths. So I thought if I can kind of bring that enthusiasm a bit to the classroom, then that could be a good thing.
Which all sounds fantastic. I'm thinking in theory that sounds fantastic, but you know, you do hear about teachers being under incredible pressure and you know all the paperwork and everything. So I'm just wondering, you know, you've given up your life in industry, you haven't got your commute anymore, but what, you know, looking forward, what's your sort of day going to be like when you go back in September? Are you going to see
very
your family?
Busy.
I mean, what's the reality of a teacher's working day?
It's tough in the beginning because we're building up our own repertoire of resources and just getting the experience. So I think the first year, your NQT year, when you're newly qualified, is tough.
Yeah.
But it is manageable. You have to be very good at planning to be a teacher. That's the first thing I'd say. And be organized and just be willing to put the hours in. But if you're efficient, it's very doable. And I can see it's getting easier. You know, as teachers get more experienced, their workload reflects that. You know, yeah. they have resource banks they use, and well, they've just done it before. So first time you teach something is hard. But even me, even now that I've taught a few subjects multiple times, I can see it's getting easier already.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm a careers advisor in school, so I interview loads of kids. And do you know what they often say to me? What makes a subject for them is the passion of the teacher.
Yes.
Without question. Mm. They're so gripped by that subject that the teacher's a great teacher and is passionate about the subject themselves. That makes such a difference. Sometimes some teachers maybe that have been doing the job for a long, long time and maybe have lost that bit of their spark. But I think new teachers coming in with that spark can make such a difference.
It can. It's one thing we look very much for at interview when we're talking to people is to really just understand where that passion for that subject has come, because you know, you want them to, like you say, be imparting that passion onto the next generation. Yeah. And I think, you know, picking up on what Lena said as well, in terms of, you know, that yes, there are a lot of challenges in teaching. There's a lot of challenges in every profession. And I think the rewards in teaching can be huge. And you know, they're very different type of rewards than perhaps some other professions, but you know, when you see a kid who gets it for the first time,
like a light bulb moment.
That sounds really cheesy, but that's really rewarding. Absolutely incredible. And also, you know, for Lena, who absolutely loves maths, she's immersed in maths day in, day out, and you know, she's sharing that enthusiasm for maths with other people. And again, there are not very many other industries that you can do that in.
And also, wouldn't it be lovely if pupils said that you were the teacher that inspired them to do something?
I'm sure
that's so powerful, isn't it?
Yeah,
what a great reason to do it. Absolutely amazing.
I think that's one of the benefits actually of coming into teaching a bit later on in life, is you've got so much more experience in your subject. You haven't just come out of university and been learning about a theory, you've actually put that into practice somewhere. So I think if I'd tried to be a teacher when I finished my first degree, I would have been not a very good teacher. Whereas now I can kind of give them examples of how the science is used in the real world and how, like, I've used it. And I think being able to share a story where I've been involved in some kind of research, or I've been in a certain country and seen something being done in a certain way.
It's very powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And then the students are really interested because it's a story rather than them learning. And that also helps you to build a relationship with those students as well, which stands you in good stead when you get to a slightly less interesting topic.
Yeah. I would think they respect you a lot more. Probably. I mean, I remember when my son was studying business studies, you know, a couple of his teachers had worked at Apple and Google, and he thought that was great, you know, whereas if they just come up through uni and then, you know, become teachers at the age of 23 or something, I think they just wouldn't have, you know, demanded the same respect at all.
I think some people have that passion and that ability to stand in front of a class at 21, having just come out of university. But I think definitely for me, I feel a lot more confident doing it now than I would have done at that point.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't think I would have tackled this very well as a graduate. I mean, this is definitely the time, which is right for me.
Yeah, but also your parent, I don't know about you, your parent? No.
Yeah, I've got two children.
But so you got a bit of an insight into that age group.
Yes, no, it does help having young kids. I'm not saying you're going to be less or more patient, but you have some understanding of the issues, of the intricacies of a young person's mind.
Because I'm conscious of time, I want to get this question in. Funny story that happened in the classroom from either of you.
Oh, putting you on the spot.
You're going to have to name names if you don't want to. Or a success story, anything that's...
Well, from funny story, I had a pigeon try and wriggle its way through the window of my lab during a practical, which, as you can imagine, caused complete pandemonium in my classroom.
I think if I got a phobia of birds, I think I'd be screaming my way out of that classroom if that was his name. So.
That was a good biology lesson.
Yeah.
Any success stories, things that happen in class with pupils that you thought, wow, that's a really powerful moment for me?
My highlight of the whole year was last week, and I had a student who is has quite a lot of needs, is quite disengaged in school in general, and spends quite a lot of lessons not doing anything and refusing to contribute. And I asked a question in a lesson the other day, and he actually put his hand up and volunteered an answer.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my goodness, it was amazing.
That is amazing.
Oh. And he actually gave me a correct answer, so it was quite nice to know that he had actually listened to me at some point in the year, even though he hadn't really been engaging in what we'd been doing for quite a lot of the time.
That is so powerful. We could talk to you all day, but unfortunately we come to the end of the interview. Before we sort of close it, Chrissy, can you give us the information about the details about the website if people want to get involved?
Yes, absolutely. So if anybody wants to find out any more information about generally how to get into teaching, or about the I2I Teaching Partnership and what we offer, our website's got all the information that you need on there. So if you go to www.eye2eyepartnership.co.uk, and then all the information that you need will be on there, and there's contact details on there as well.
That's perfect. Thank you very much. That was Chrissy Taylor, Lena Taylor-Vick and Emma Mitchell. And now we're going to have a short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Claire Van Dam from the Lady Garden Foundation. So stay with us.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
And welcome to the studio to Claire Van Dam of the Lady Garden Foundation. It's great to have you on.
Thank you, Anne. It's lovely to be on. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, really. It's a real pleasure. So before we talk about the foundation, tell us a little bit about your sort of background and how you got involved and everything.
With the Lady Garden?
Well, yes, but what you were doing before and yes. You know, what brought you to this point?
Well, my background actually was broadcast journalism. I went to the States and went to America and did a university degree out there. So I loved what you do. I can see, you know, that was part of my life. So I was doing that very much so for, you know, sort of 10, 15 years with Lorraine Kelly, and I went on GMTV and I did lots of radio show with Matthew Wright. But, you know, I was more like the guest, you know, sort of people coming on rather than hosting my own show.
Oh, right. So chatting with the guests.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yeah. And then after that, I decided that it was time to sort of settle down and have kids. And I was with my longtime partner, Sebastian. And so we had two beautiful girls. And then I sort of took it some time out. I just decided that I wanted to be sort of full-time mum. And I find that's quite a big job, as you both know. Yeah, you know, and I just wanted to be sort of full-on with them. And then about 5 years ago, we decided to set up a property developing company. So we renovate and sell to first-time buyers in Streatham.
So when you say first-time buyers, because obviously Streatham is quite an expensive area. So tell me a bit how it makes it first-time buyers sort of market.
Well, it's people who are in a situation where, you know, they've either got a, you know, a good job in the city.
Okay.
They may have also have had parents who can, you know, put a nice deposit down.
Yeah.
But they obviously know that those areas are sort of the good areas to, you know, buy. And obviously renting, as we all know, is very expensive. So by the time you got a mortgage, you're actually probably paying a bit less than you would be if you were renting
in the end.
But it's getting on the ladder, which is hard.
So you stipulate it's got to be to first-time buyers.
Yes.
That's good.
Okay. Yes, because we think with the market and everything else going on politically, we won't go into that too much right now. But, you know, we feel like under the radar is a lot safer because we live sort of in the Hammersmith area, and that whole area is just, it's just not moving at all.
Isn't it? Okay, so no. Streatham's up and coming, presumably.
Yeah, Streatham, Herne Hill, Crystal Palace, they're still all areas that still have an opportunity there. So you have to go out a bit rather than staying central.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun though.
Yeah, it's great. No, it's brilliant. And we've got a design team, we've got a young team with us, which is, you know, as you say, in my 40s, it keeps me young because I'm sort of with an interior designer she's on Instagram. She doesn't charge a lot of money and she does very much Scandi, you know, that Scandinavian look. And that's what they want.
Minimalist.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the look they want rather than what I want, which is, you know, which is our generation would want something completely different.
Yeah.
Sure. So you've got to think about that. You've got to think, you know, and you look at Instagram and you look what they're doing and realise that's the style that you've got to do for your first time buyers. Be realistic.
Yeah. So as you say, it keeps you young, as do your daughters.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. We know about that with daughters. Yeah. Trying to keep up with them on tech and everything is a little bit tricky sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Lady Garden Foundation.
Yeah.
So you set that up together with friends, family?
Yeah. Well, sadly, my mother had endometrial cancer in 2009. And then in 2011, she passed away. And my sister and I were very, very upset about that. And I just thought to give back and to support what she has done for us, I really wanted her to be a legacy rather than just say, oh, well, she's in my memory. You know, I actually thought she has to become something. And I was fortunate to, because I was also in the health bit as well. I was sort of promoting ionized water because I found that for my mother, called Kangen water. And then I met Susanna Banerjee. She's the Royal Marsden oncologist.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
She's very impressive. And she had been introduced to me by a lady called Mika. And Mika also lost her mother through this horrendous cancer as well. So it was Mika, myself, my sister who kind of brought the team in together. And we sort of went to other women who had also had the same experience. They were very upset about their mother. And I said, look, you're in a position, you know people, let's help Susanna Banerjee with this gene treatment. Because in the on the website of Lady Garden Foundation, you can see that only 1 in 10 at the moment survive.
I know, it's incredible.
With chemotherapy alone, and that's just not good enough.
No.
So Susanna Banerjee is basically creating a gene treatment chemotherapy, because our genes are all different.
Of course, yeah.
So it's the future.
I read this really sad statistic from the website. It says, since the Lady Garden Foundation was launched in 2014, 80,000 women in the UK have been diagnosed with a gynaecological cancer. Only 56% have a good chance of survival. The outlook is much worse for the other 35,000 women, and it's only through research that you'll be able to save more lives. I mean, that's quite a staggering statistic, actually.
It is, and I don't think really people are aware of that. You know, again, it's like we were saying earlier, you know, about our daughters. It's making them aware. It's saying, these are the symptoms. You know, don't shy away, go and see somebody. And, you know, let's not make it this a taboo. You know, we can talk about these things. It's very open, and you know, our parents' generation were very closed like a book. You couldn't talk about anything. Women's,
you didn't talk about down there.
No. And even my mother sort of had the awfulest word for the lady's, you know, monthly cycle. It was just called the curse. I mean, what a thing to say.
I've heard that a few times. So really, I mean, I was looking earlier at the symptoms for these various forms of cancer. And is it really the point that with these types of cancers, if you've got the symptoms, you are already quite advanced?
Yeah.
And is that why the survival rate is currently so low?
I think, yes. I mean, a lot of women, if they get stage 4, the chances are very slim.
Yeah.
So I would say that the regular, you know, checkups, the smear tests, you know, and actually going there and actually having it checked.
Yeah, but I mean, smear tests, obviously that deals with cervical cancer, but the other cancers, what kind of screening is there available?
Well, that's exactly what we're trying to do with Lady Garden Foundation, is really trying to get more awareness, and because, you know, it is a silent killer, and a lot of the time people don't have symptoms, they don't have any pain, and it just, they go there, then suddenly it goes stage 4 and that's it.
Yeah.
So it's just making people aware, and any bloating or anything like that. And I mean, a lot of people do get bloating. So, you know,
you could get bloating for all manner of reasons, probably.
Yeah, exactly. But we're just trying to create a lot of more awareness. And through that, we have raised, as you can see, you know, a lot of money, which has been great.
$800,000, which is amazing.
We do a lot of events, which that's how Anne and I met.
Thanks for the invite, Anne.
You can come next time.
This was a shopping afternoon in May outside, wasn't it?
I've seen some of the things that you've done to raise money. They look amazing. Yeah, the breakfast.
I mean, as I said, Bodeville was kind of a fun part, you know, for children really, and it's to do with my Pomeranian called Bodie, who's a Pomeranian, and he's called Bodie, and so we've had him painted, and then, you know, he's now become a bit of a legend at school, and then we decided to have a Bodeville festival for Lady Garden Foundation, which is great. So we raised some money there. We do every year in May a run in Hyde Park. That's really been good. I mean, we've had it for sort of 3 or 4 years now, and you know, we actually have now men running as well. Before it was just the women.
Right.
But we're sort of saying, hang on a second, men's parents get, mothers get sick, or wives.
Or wives, or
daughters, or
potentially daughters. Yeah, absolutely.
Just for the purposes of the listeners, which cancers come under the umbrella term of gynecological cancers? So obviously ovarian, cervical,
endometrial. Right. That's my mother's one. That actually I didn't know about until my mother was diagnosed with that.
So is that another one where you wouldn't pick up the symptoms early on?
Well,
or can you with that?
That's
one?
A very good question, because for my mother, I think she did pick up symptoms very early on, and I think she just didn't deal with them, sadly. You know, it's one of those ones like, oh, no, I don't want to deal with that.
So what are some of the symptoms for that one then, just that we know?
Well, for her, it was very much bloating and pain. I know every time she went over, my father told me, every time she went over some bumps in the road, she was like, oh, slow, you know. And that's the sign, you know. Any sort of pain in any of that area should definitely be checked immediately.
But even if your mother and many like her who are kind of in denial, even if she had gone along and said, you know, I've got this, bloating and pain, you know, by that point, you know, what can be done?
But as I say, I think it might have been something that could have been done a lot earlier, like you say, 3 or 4 years before all the other things, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, I think she was going for her smear test, but, you know, the reason why she did go, she had the pain before and then she got the bleeding.
Oh, okay.
And a woman of 68 shouldn't be having that. No. Yeah. So that was the sign, but that was too little too late.
That's what I was thinking.
Would a smear test pick up that as well?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then they can also, if you have any symptoms, then they will do an x-ray.
Ultrasound.
There we go. That's the one. That's when they can really have a look inside and make sure that you're okay.
Okay, we've got lots of interesting things to discuss with this. We're going to have a quick ad break and then we're back to continue our conversation with Claire Van Damme. So stay with us.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklyn's Radio.
I'm so glad you're open.
Thank goodness you're here.
Do you ever close?
Did you know the pharmacy at 20 Church Street, Weybridge is open 100 hours every week to meet your immediate medical needs? We're here for you from 7am to 11pm weekdays, 7am to 9pm Saturdays, and 10am to 4pm on Sundays. Our friendly and knowledgeable team can provide you with the advice you need, as well as helping you with repeat prescriptions, all the over-the-counter products you would expect, and if you can't get in to visit us, we will deliver to you. The Pharmacy, 20 Church Street, Weybridge. We're here when you need us, 100 hours every week.
Brooklyn's Radio's audience is growing. Potential listeners are listening, but are they hearing your message? Maybe you're saying to yourself, I don't know about internet radio, or maybe I should wait. Well, instead, think about it this way. Do you want to be one of the first businesses like yours to advertise on internet radio, or the last? So why not tap into the power of Brooklyn's Radio easily and affordably? Contact Fiona through sales@brooklynsradio.co.uk. That's sales@brooklynsradio.co.uk. Brooklyn's Radio. Loving Surrey Radio. Brooklyn's Radio.
Hello, Graham Laycock here. Join me every Friday afternoon from 1:15 to 4. There'll be plenty of good music and chat, including the latest news and events in Surrey and the lighter news stories of the day. Plus, the Woking and Sandbear Hospice Lottery draw, and Dinah Roberts from the Guildford Tourist Information Centre with the essential guide to what to see and do in Surrey over the coming weeks. So join me, Graham Laycock, this Friday at 1:15 on Brooklyn's Radio.
This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklyn's Radio.
Welcome back to Just Women with me, Anne Twist, together with Ivana O'Brien. We've been chatting with Claire Van Damme of the Lady Garden Foundation. And I just wanted to ask you, Claire, obviously you've raised, I think, since 2014, about £800,000, largely funding the research at the Royal Marsden Hospital, the work of Dr. Banerjee. But, and I think that's supported four research fellows. So going forward, what's the mission to find more research fellows or different kinds of treatments or the plan?
I think the plan is really that obviously we've got all this information here in London, England, and obviously then there's other doctors like Dr. Banerjee in Holland, in America, and they are trying to build all this information together to really get more women diagnosed early, to have obviously, you know, they have their blood samples taken. We're looking at genes. We're looking at why do some women, you know, with the genes treatment do well? Why have others not done well? Is it a genetic thing?
Yeah.
We're basically getting down to the sort of cellular levels, which others, you know, at the moment haven't. I mean, it's still very early days in the way of, you know, before I think you were ill and that was it, you know. There was no hope and chance, and it's prolonging people's lives and giving them a chance, you know, to live.
I was shocked at this as well. It says recent figures show that cervical screening is at its lowest level in 2 decades, with only one in three women not taking their screening tests. Why do we think that's happening?
I'm surprised, because there was a lot about it a few years ago, wasn't it?
Jade Goody.
Jade Goody died. Yes. I think there was a surge then, wasn't there?
Yes.
I'm surprised, actually, that hasn't kind of continued.
That's what I think. And, you know, I mean, I don't know for you and your daughters, but, you know, that's the sort of thing, you know, when it comes to it, as a mother, I think I would just be absolutely on it with my children, saying, even when they're like 25, have you been this year, you know, darling, you know.
But with younger girls, obviously, at what point, for me, being a mature lady, I get a letter every 3 years, and I've got mine coming up soon.
Yes.
But with my daughter, who's 22, they don't routinely test that age group. So how would they...
And they should that, do because private. People like Jade Gooding with that, yeah, with that age. I mean, she was young.
So would you say go private and just get it done?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but that's a very good point. Actually, I've got a daughter the same age. Yeah. And, you know, I sent her the link to this website today and said, read this. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know whether she gets called for smear tests. I'll ask her. But also, there's that jab that they can have, isn't there, when they're about 14 or 15
now. HPV.
The HPV jab. Yeah. And I don't know if that's given them some complacency that I've had the jab, therefore I'm okay.
Yeah.
Is that
possible? I mean, that's Tatum, my eldest, has just had her first HPV, or second actually now. But you're right. Yeah. That's meant to be sort of preventing this ovarian cancer. But it's not preventing all of it. And I, to be honest with you, I do think strongly that, you know, all girls after a certain age should be having regular checks. I mean, 3 years also is quite long. It's long, you know, things can change very quickly.
Because is it true that if you get it when you're younger, it's harder to sort of fight it? In other words,
Exactly. I mean, they sort of say after women, my mother-in-law was saying this, but, you know, sort of after a certain age, I think, say, let's say, 65, 70, I think you're sort of through that.
Yeah, it's not so bad.
The estrogen. It's dropped a lot. So I think, you know, I can't vouch for everyone. Obviously, I don't want to sit there saying, oh, because I'm not a doctor.
Yeah.
I'm not medically trained. I can't say that. But I've heard and read that you're in a safer position and it's, you know, place when you are older. But for our children growing up and everything else, absolutely. I think it should be a checkup.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think so. Okay, and I was just thinking about the work that Dr. Banerjee does and her team. Mm. Is part of it now, or is part of the plan going to be to sort of test genetically? So if, say, your mother, you know, she had endometrial cancer, whether they would test whether you and your daughters have the gene, or is that available already, or is that part of the...
Yeah, I think that's not available at the moment, but I think in time that's definitely something we can, you know, be looking at. And funny enough, actually, I was just talking to a naturopath, a friend of mine, who I'm going to be seeing anyway, because I'm into all this sort of diagnostics and functioning medicine. I believe in all that rather than taking a pill.
Yeah.
And she just said to me now, she said, you know, when we do some blood tests, Claire, with you, we're going to look at all your genetic, you know, what you're prone, you could be possibly facing in 10, 20 years, which, you know, is good because then you can change your diet, you can change the way you eat.
Yeah.
You need to maybe be less stressed, you know, and you can just look at all those options to make sure that you're on track.
Because things like Ancestry.com, they do the health, if you want it, they do a more advanced thing that tells you what you're predisposed to in terms of, say, Alzheimer's, all that kind of things, including the test results as well, isn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, it's frightening, isn't it, in a way. You know, you think, I'm going to get Alzheimer's in 20 years.
Do I really want to know? I know.
Yeah. How much do you want to know?
I know.
But I think with the cancer, it's slightly different because if you know earlier, you can get it treated,
that's what I'm
can't
thinking.
You earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes a big difference.
And then, you know, like, you know, the thing you always worry about is for breast cancer, it's the BRCA gene, you know, like Angelina Jolie, and for us it's the same thing, you know, you when your mother has been ill and died, you know, that's something you're really worried about for your own self.
Is this
a gene thing? Are we all prone to that?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So that's not available at the moment, but that it's sort of working towards it.
Yeah, that's what they're heading for. Yes, definitely.
It says only 1 in 10 patients will see tumours shrink with chemotherapy, because obviously that's not a brilliant statistic, is it?
That's the thing. That's
is it because the chemotherapy that's used in this country isn't as advanced as it is, say, in America, or what's
going on? That's a possibility, and I think, again, it's to do with genes, you know. I mean, you say, you know, your genes, my genes, and, you know, we're all got different genes here, so perhaps the chemotherapy would work for you very well, but for you and I, it would be a disaster, you know. It's just not doing enough.
No.
And it's an aggressive cancer, the ones in the, you know, that region.
And in relation to, obviously, the charity, do you, how can people support it? Are you always looking for volunteers to help with events?
Yeah,
we are,
absolutely. I mean, basically, we said, you know, there's obviously a contact form that you can go on to if you want to be part of our, you know, to get involved or whatever. And that's it's called ladygardenfoundation.com. We're on Instagram as well.
Yep.
So that's Lady Garden Foundation. Again, just send a direct message. But we're so keen to have people, you know, who want to volunteer or want to share their stories, or they have a great idea, a contact, you know, who wants to be part of this, and, you know, or just come and be part of the fun run.
Yeah.
They love running, or, you know, Bodeville.
And sorry, knickers.
And knickers too, yes.
I've seen the knickers.
Yeah, you've seen the knickers.
Yes, I have seen the knickers.
Yeah.
So what's your sort of main involvement in the charity? I mean, presumably, you know, there's quite a team. What's everyone doing? What do you do?
Well, again, we all sort of take on different roles, really. I mean, like, for example, you know, sort of Jenny and my sister, they all get involved in sort of doing the fun run, and they do ladies' lunches, and they do a lot of sort of collaborations with fashion designers like right. Gucci and, yeah. You know, Donna Ader and, you know, whoever wants to be involved, really. So they do sort of events there, and then they, you know, Gucci will make a nice t-shirt with Lady Garden, and then of course all the proceeds go, or some of the proceeds go towards our charity, which yeah. is lovely, plus a bit of Instagram and a bit of social media. Yeah. And for me, I decided to sort of, I thought, well, they've got control of all that. Yeah. They don't need my energy.
Yeah, and too so many
people. Yeah, I thought it'd be quite nice to get down to Surrey, as my girls are down in Surrey at school, and try and start this social awareness in a different place.
Yeah.
Because I thought, well, we're in London. That's going well. But what about Surrey? What about Leeds? What about Manchester? You know, yeah, we need yeah. to go out there and do great shows like this and, you know,
just
create awareness.
Word.
Yeah. And yeah. get more women. Because a lot of women down in Surrey don't know what's going on.
No.
When I said, you know, what, do you know, have you heard of it? Well, what's that? You know, they don't know.
Yeah. So that's, your, so that's one of your visions, is to spread the word, obviously.
Yeah, I'd like to sort of, I love these women chat shows. It's really fun.
Well, I mean, it's what you used to do, so
yeah,
I'm sure you do love
exactly.
it.
Yeah. And I did say to some of the team at Lady Gaga, I said, how much sort of advertising are we doing, you know, going on shows? And we said, well, you know, we're so busy doing the events, you know, they've got to raise the money as well. So we're all taking our effort where yeah. we can, because this is all very much voluntary work. This,
yeah,
as
of course
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a passion for us. And, you know,
it's a passion. Obviously, you want to raise money. You don't want to be spending money on advertising and PR right. and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So you want to raise awareness, but
yeah.
you want to spend money doing
yeah.
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah. But we've all got a lot of energy. And we've all got a lot of passion towards this, so I think we'll do well.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yes.
If you could talk to a younger you,
yeah.
what would you say to her?
About this.
In life in general. So say a you 30 years ago, what would be your advice to her?
I would say work hard, because it's a tough old world out there. You know, keep your head down, have fun, and really eat really well and eat healthy, less sugar.
Oh, yeah.
That's brilliant advice, isn't it?
It is, actually, the whole sugar thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've gone through life not smoking, because I realised quite early on that that wasn't good for me.
Yeah.
But I do quite like a bit of sugar. So,
yeah.
You know,
no, we all do.
That is my addiction of choice,
yeah.
sugar.
Yeah. Yeah.
In particular, chocolate.
Yes, exactly. Mm. And we all like it. And everyone yeah. likes a bit of caffeine, a bit of this, you know, yeah. and you realise that's all part of the, but you know, yes, a bit of everything in life is good for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Claire. For listeners who like to get involved, can you give us the website details for listeners to get involved in the charity?
Oh, yeah. So it's ladygardenfoundation.com.
Brilliant. Thank you. So that was Claire Van Dam from the Lady Garden Foundation. And we'd like to thank all our guests on today's show. That's Chrissy Taylor from Waden School with Lena Taylor-Vick and Emma Mitchell, and Claire Van Dam from the Lady Garden Foundation. And also thanks to my lovely co-presenter, Anne Twist.
Thank you, Ivana. And just to say, we're always keen to hear about local women with interesting lives. So if you know of someone who you think should be on our show, please email justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk with the relevant information, and we'll get in touch with them.
Yes, and hopefully we'll get them on a future show. Details of past and future guests are on our website. That's brooklandsradio.co.uk/justwomen. And you can find us on Facebook too at /justwomen.br and Twitter at Brooklands Radio. So thank you for listening, and join us again next week for Just Women at 1 o'clock on Tuesday, repeated 8 o'clock on Thursday. So it's goodbye from me, Ivana O'Brien.
And it's goodbye from me, Anne Twist.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk, or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.